Because if it did, it would have to communicate to the other across the quanta at a speed that was something like 7.5 times the speed of light, which according to the theory of relativity was impossible. So Einstein said it's impossible to measure one and to have that one communicate that information to the other to somehow affect it. Now, Niels Bohr was of a different mindset. And in fact, there was a theorem that was put forth. It was called Bell's theorem. And the theorem was created to determine who was right, Niels Bohr or Einstein. But they weren't able to put the theorem into practice at the time. It was in like 1964, I believe, was the time of Bell's theorem. So they couldn't actually make a practical application of Bell's theorem. But it was a theorem which in practice, if we put it into practice, would determine who was right, Niels Bohr or Einstein. Did affecting one affect the other? Like, but did the simple act of observation or measurement change the other photon? Yes, and actually there was a study done at the University of Paris within the last 20 years that was finally able to put Bell's theorem into practice, finally able to apply that theorem. And they found that Niels Bohr was right and Einstein was wrong. That, in fact, when you measure one photon, that affects the other. It can't not affect the other. They're interconnected somehow. So the question becomes how. Now, there's a couple of things that became really evident from this experiment, a couple of things that they found. The first one, which was very interesting, is that the observer, the simple act of measurement or observation of the photon somehow changes that. That's important for us in NLP. What that says is that the observer can't not affect that which is observed. So you affect that which you observe. The very act of observation changes that which you observe in some way. The observer and the observed are always intimately connected. See, according to Newtonian physics, the observer and the observed are separate. But what quantum physics tells us is that the observer and the observed are always and intimately connected. You cannot look at something without affecting it, according to quantum physics. In fact, electrons and subatomic particles and all of that, according to quantum physics, don't even exist until we look for them to exist. Now, we know that if we looked at this table through a high-powered microscope, we'd see more space than we see solid matter. Quantum physics tells us that. If we look through it, we'd actually see it's the density and the arrangement of the subatomic particles, the atoms, the molecules, and the rate of vibration that give the illusion of matter. So it's the act of observation, in this case through the high-powered microscope, that caused those to come into existence. They're not there until we look for them to be there. Just as every time we measure the photon, that changes that photon in some way. The observer always and intimately affects that which is observed. They're intimately interconnected. And the other thing that they found, from the application of Bell's theorem was that the second photon is also affected. So even though these photons of light were sent off in two opposite directions, the observation of one somehow affects the other. So when they measure this one moves as well. Two seemingly interconnected photons. Now, Einstein's problem was, he said, well, no, that can't be true. But the fact is, maybe they're not communicating per se. So here's the standard. Like, you may wonder, how's that possible? How's it possible to measure one photon going in one direction and that to affect the other photon? Here's the standard explanation in quantum physics, or the standard metaphor for explanation in quantum physics. Let's imagine for a moment that you were looking at a goldfish bowl. And on this goldfish bowl, I don't know if fish have noses, but on this goldfish bowl, let's say you were looking at two camera angles of two goldfish bowls, and you saw that on the goldfish bowl, you were looking at two different goldfish, right? You'd see the goldfish move, okay, and you'd watch both camera angles of this goldfish bowls. You'd see two different cameras, and you see the goldfish seem to be moving, but they seem to be moving. There's something synchronous about the movement that they have. Like one fish, as soon as that moves, that the other fish seems to be moving at the same time. And then perhaps at some point you'd realize that you weren't actually looking at two different goldfish bowls. You were looking at two different angles of the same goldfish bowl. You were looking at two different angles of the same goldfish bowl. So that's a standard metaphorical explanation of what could be happening here from a quantum physics perspective. Here's a different way to look at it. Let's say you've all heard of Flatland, right? The Flatland is a famous NLP book. And in the book Flatland, there's a point. Now, this point lives in Flatland. The point lives in Flatland. It's a singular dimensional reality. In fact, there's only points that live in Flatland. A bunch of points live in Flatland. And one day, a new point comes into town. So the new point comes into town, and the new point comes into town and says, "Hey, guess what? I'm not a point. I'm a line." Now all the other points say, "No, you're crazy. What are you talking about? You're not a line. You're a point. There's no such thing as lines. There's only points." Get the point? I mean, because we're talking about Flatland, right? So the point says, "Hey, I'm a line." And they say, "No, you can't be a line. What are you talking about? There's no such thing as lines. We're all points. You're a point." And then the line lies down and says, "Look, I really am a line. Check me out. I am a line." Now, you could imagine how it would be possible. Like, let's say we had a flat piece of paper, and you had a bunch of points on it, and you took a line upright and you shoved it through the piece of paper. You could imagine how the other points would only see it as a point, right? Whether it were a line or a point. They would only see the point. Get the point? Right? So, is it possible that that the point was really a line? Or here's another potential possibility. Maybe the point, like even then, they might still only see this point of the line and that point of the line. Or maybe you could look at those two points. Like maybe that point was a point. It was a point of a end of a triangle. You can imagine that, where you'd see the points. Or maybe it could be two points of a circle. Like let's take that same flat piece of paper for a moment. If you had that flat piece of paper, and you had a circle that was jammed through that flat piece of paper, whoosh, then you might only see the two points of the circle, if you were a point. Right? So that's another explanation that we could have in quantum physics, that there's something beyond what we see. Now, the other thing that Bell's theorem proved to be true was not just that the act of observation, the observer always and intimately affects the observed. The other thing that it proved to prove true when they were able to actually apply Bell's theorem was that all of our current understandings of locality lose their meaning in a quantum mechanical universe. When you get down to the quantum level, our current understandings of locality, meaning that there's non-locality of information in a quantum mechanical world. There's non-locality of information. And our current understandings of time, space, matter, and energy lose all of their meaning in a quantum mechanical world. Our current understandings of time, space, matter, and energy, especially location. Like location has no meaning in quantum mechanics. There's no difference between here and there. Right? That's how it's possible to move one photon or electron and have the other move simultaneously. That's non-locality of information. In fact, some of you are familiar with this description. I'll share it with you again. It started back in the 60s when they first postulated the holographic storage of memory. When you think of the holographic storage of memory, they said that, and this was first postulated by Carl Prebram, when he said that human memory is stored holographically or holonomically throughout the entire nervous system. Right? Kind of like a hologram. When you look at a hologram, the part is in the whole and the whole is in the part in a hologram. So, for example, if we wanted to make a holographic picture of this cup,